Call the meeting for Wednesday, March 7th, 2018, State Government Finance to order. Representative Pugh, have you reviewed the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes from March 5th.
Okay, Representative Pugh moves the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Oh, it's March 6th. Sorry. I saw the... Okay. Note that. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Wonderful. Okay, we are going to move on to an update on Legislative Budget Office. We've got Mr. Hubinger. Yes? And Representative Vogel. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and fellow committee members. Here today to report on the Legislative Budget Office, and I'm sure most of you know that it was passed in legislation this last year to start a Legislative Budget Office. And I'm just going to go over some of the notes that I've put together relative to how it got there and what we've been doing. The LBO is to provide the legislature with nonpartisan cost impact of anticipated legislation. So basically to look at fiscal notes and local impact notes. It will be led by a director who will be appointed by the LCC and will serve 6 years and can only be removed for cause. And, of course, a lot of that has to do with the objectivity that the LBO is charged with doing. The LBO is required to contract with MMB for the fiscal note tracking system that they have been using, and MMB is required to provide access and use. Mm-hmm. And the reason that was done is so that we can be more efficient, since that tracking system was updated in 2015, and it was decided that that would be the best alternative rather than trying to invent separate software. The legislation provided for an LBO planning task force, which is responsible to consider the office's responsibilities, the duties of the state agencies, departments, and local governments in facilitating the LBO's work, as well as other issues the task force determines relevant. The task force may also recommend additional legislation to implement the transition or further clarify the office's structure or responsibilities. Hear a little bit about that today, possibly. The task force transition plans are considered advisory in nature. The office is established under the control of the LCC, and the LCC is charged with the responsibility for appointing the director, who then may hire staff necessary to carry out the function of the office. So the task force itself is not responsible for hiring the director. That will be the LCC's responsibility. The legislation states the head or the administrator officer of each department or agency of state government, including the Supreme Court, shall cooperate with the LBO in the fiscal note process. And the LBO is charged with the responsibility for coordinating the development of fiscal notes. The task force is composed of 2 House members, 2 Senate members, the legislative auditor, the Commissioner of Management and Budget, and the State Budget Director. The task force is mandated to submit a preliminary report, which it has done, and a final report, which is due no later than December 1st, 18. To date, the task force has met twice. The first meeting reviewed the legislation, as well as suggestions and discussions on how the task force could work toward its purpose. The second meeting had a review of what other states were doing relative to their LBOs and an open discussion on how the LBO could best serve the needs of all those who will be affected by its work. That discussion was driven by task force members being asked to answer the question, from your perspective and expertise, what ideas do you have that would make the LBO function the best for all parties involved? And the reason for that was, after trying to figure out how to put together a plan and knowing the limited time that is available, especially with the legislature convening, it was going to be difficult to really go through a planning process like you might expect for something of this significance. So what we tried to do is get to the heart of the matter and say from each individual perspective of those people that are participating in the task force, what do you think can be done to make this thing most effective? And we spent about two-thirds of that meeting going around the table, getting those ideas and different comments, and I thought that was helpful. So we are now at the stage where we've had two meetings. With the legislature going, it makes it a little difficult to get everybody together on this, so I'm not sure. We have not scheduled the next meeting yet, but we are on track to hopefully get together the plan and recognize that we have the report to get to the legislature on December 1st or before. So with that, Mr. Hubinger is available as well to give a little bit of an update and some thoughts from the perspective of the LCC. And then I think Mr. Marks, too, I had invited to share with you the research. The fiscal staff did an excellent job of research and finding out information on what other states are doing. So with that, I would come forward.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. I think I'll talk about two chunks of pieces that are informing the conversation about the budget office. One is the series of issues that have been identified either through the planning task force or between in conversations with members and staff. And then secondly, talk about the LCC's responsibilities in this regard. For some issues that are on the table that we're starting to sort through as we work towards development and implementation of the office, so a number of issues, some of them interrelated with others. One relates to staff size. The budget and the fiscal note for this office proposed a staffing of about 6.5 people. We believe that generally that will be adequate staff to carry out this function, but we also are mindful that the current operation managed by MMB uses executive budget officers to carry out one part of the process in reviewing fiscal notes that are prepared by state agencies. And they have about 13 budget officers that are involved in preparation of fiscal notes, but they also have other responsibilities. Overall, their FTE towards the fiscal note preparation process is about 6.5, which is what drove our recommendation for budget at 6.5. But we recognize that there may be bottlenecks when the 1,000 fiscal notes that are prepared during the budget year are in the height of their production season, that there might be some delays. And we just have to be mindful of that and think about that possible impediment. A second issue relates to data security and access. The fiscal note tracking system is hardware and software managed by MMB. The legislation calls for the LCC to develop a contract with MMB for access and control of that system. We need to figure out how our fiscal staff will manage that process and assign fiscal notes to agencies and to ensure the integrity of access to the system. That would be one more step. Third, one issue that got some discussion during the transition planning task force meetings was the application of the Data Practices Act. That generally does not apply to the legislature. We generally do comply with it, but it is based on commitments by leadership. The Minnesota Management Budget has clearly indicated that the Act applies to their work and generally posts fiscal notes within about 48 hours after their completion. So the LCC and the Budget Office need to figure out how they're going to deal with that issue. Fourth is an issue about what specifically the LBO staff will be doing during the interim. As I said, the EBOs that do this work for MMB have other responsibilities that they have during the rest of the year. We just need to be clear about what the LBO staff will be doing. In the fiscal note, we indicated that they could be doing research on issues of interest to the fiscal committees and staff, and otherwise needing to engage in active discussions with the agency accounts that they're responsible for. A fifth issue is There is some lack of agreement about what some of the language in the legislation means in terms of who's responsible for preparing fiscal notes. Currently, fiscal notes are generally prepared by the subject matter experts in state agencies, and then that information is assembled into a fiscal note that is given or transmitted to MMB. Some of the language in the bill that passed last session may lead to some confusion that perhaps the LBO was going to prepare the fiscal notes from scratch, and that was not the intent. Six staff could not possibly prepare 1,000 fiscal notes from scratch, so there may need to be some language for a technical bill to correct that or to clarify that. And then finally, we need to sort through what the roles of the LBO staff are vis-a-vis the executive budget officers at MMB. MMB has indicated that they, too, need to have an understanding of the fiscal impacts of proposed legislation and that they are intending to have their own analysis of proposed legislation. And so there will need to be some clarifying about access to the fiscal note tracking system and how notes prepared by MMB, perhaps, would be evaluated in the light of notes prepared by the LBO.
Mr. Hubinger, if I could. So you just said that MMB is going to want to hold on to some people on their own to have their own analysis of fiscal impact. How much duplicativeness will there be in that effort?
Mr. Chair and members, as I understand it, there was no reduction in the budget to MMB as a result of the transfer of this function to the LBO. Mm-hmm. They have about 13 EVOs that are responsible for a number of subject areas. Some of it, about 6.5 FTEs, are assigned to this task currently.
And then help me understand also, 6.5 doing the work, another 6.5, what are they essentially doing? And this is partly a refresher for me since it's been a while since we've talked about this, and maybe Representative Vogel wanted to deal with that. Or we always have phone a friend as well.
Mr. Chair, the executive budget officers at MMB, in addition to their responsibilities in assisting in the fiscal note preparation process, also are responsible for working with agencies in developing their biennial budget proposals. And I believe some have some responsibility with respect to capital budgets.
Okay. Please continue.
Mr. Chair, that's just a list of issues that are on the table that the staff have been working on. I should also say that this effort for the budget office is a multi-office effort. We've been working closely with the staff in House Research and House Fiscal Analysts, Fiscal Analysis, and then also their colleagues in the Senate Council on Research. The LCC was given a number of specific responsibilities in this legislation. As Representative Vogel indicated.
Members, if you could, if you've got a cell phone, stick it in your pocket, if you would. Thank you.
As Representative Vogel indicated, one specific task of the LCC is to appoint the director for this office. Staff have been working on a position description for that position. We've been routing around to the various offices that have some connection with the LBO and are trying to fine-tune that so that it will be ready to go when we're ready to post the position. We've laid out a hiring process. We anticipate that once the position is posted, it would take about 9 weeks to complete the interview and appointment process. Second, we need to find office space for this group of 6.5 folks. We are looking at space in this building and elsewhere in the Capitol complex. But for that, haven't finalized anything yet. And we're in discussion with House and Senate leadership about what ideas they might have about where this office ought to be. As I indicated, we're working with staff on a technical bill to do some clarifications on some issues that need a little bit of fixing. And then last item on the LCC's to-do list is a contract with MMB for managing the fiscal note tracking system. That's the hardware and software system that generates the fiscal notes. We learned in the last session that system is integrated with other software that MMB uses. So the solution was to leave that system in MMB's environment, but that the LCC would contract with MNB for management and access and maintenance of that system.
And a question for you on that, since it's fairly well established, I'm kind of an IT nerdy guy. End-user license agreements, those have been all wrapped up in the discussion to make sure that you're in compliance with the utilization of that software. Security, obviously, would make, like to make sure that you're in a secure environment and that you're dealing with some of the latest or latest available to you cyber tools that you might have to prevent things from getting into the hands of the wrong people and such. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair, that would be good points, and those would be parts of the discussions with MNB in the contract.
Okay. Representative Vogel, did you have other folks that wish to comment or like yourself to pick up on some of this?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, I do. I don't know if there would be other questions of us at this point. I was going to have Mr. Marks just go over a lot of the research that they've done and presented to the task force so that you can see some of the work that's been being done. But, you know, I know there was a question as far as the staff, what do they do in the non-legislature time. That is one thing that we haven't discussed yet, although in conversations I'm thinking that there's probably more than enough to keep people busy doing further analysis that would make us more productive in our work, whether it's going back and seeing whether the fiscal note was actually, when we look at fiscal notes, it's important to remember that these are projections. They're not going to come true because nobody knows what it is until it's done generally. So, you know, maybe some of the time could be spent on looking back and saying, okay, we did this fiscal note. We knew that it wasn't going to be exact, but why wasn't it exact? Are there things that we can correct in our process? Are there other ways that when we're drafting legislation that we can be more accurate in the way that we're looking at how much it's going to cost? Just one of the things. And I do think that there are a number of things, but the key at this point, as is outlined here, is to get this thing functional. You know, there's a large time effort needed for the fiscal note tracking system to be integrated, as well as the LCC hiring a director and that director bringing on some staff. So we've been occupying our time more with the basics than going forward.
I know we've got some member questions. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Vogel, to that point, have you guys had a conversation about this entity doing our own budget forecast for the legislature in comparison to what is produced by MMB?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we haven't at this point. The scope of this is a planning task force to make recommendations, and I would hope that once we would get some of these technical things hammered out and discussed so that we can make sure that the office is fully functioning right, but then we can have a discussion. Now, that may lead into our report isn't due till December, so it may obviously happen after session, but I would like to have some of those conversations to see, to make sure that people are using as productive as possible, and also that we, as legislators, get the information that we need from our perspective. I think we've had enough of the discussion on some of the audit things that we've done and so forth, and it's good that you do have a legislature and an executive branch with separations and having information that is relevant to both so that it makes for better discussions.
Representative Anderson?
And Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, I guess that would be kind of my two cents of a suggestion. I think it would be helpful for us. Obviously, that takes a lot of time. And they'll have the time in the interim to do the November forecast, and then February is kind of more like an update as well. I think for the legislature, it would be helpful. You know, forecasts are always, there's always room for interpretation. I think it would be helpful for the legislature themselves to have another set of eyes taking a look at what we can expect for revenues for the state, and then also, you know, the impact of our expenditures moving forward, too. So I think that this office, the LBO office, could be useful in that regard, too. I think just analyzing overall state spending trends and what we can see and how that's impacted from the national level. I think there's a lot of different resources that this office could provide to lawmakers as we're making decisions.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I appreciate that because, again, we are there to make recommendations, so I'll definitely add that to the list of things that we can discuss. Thank you.
And Representative Vogel, to Representative Anderson's question, I know you've done sort of a survey of other states that are doing that. Are there other states that have done and are implementing exactly what was just asked?
Well, it's a great lead-in, Mr. Chair. Why don't I invite Mr. Marks up here? And they did a really great job. For a person that enjoys information, data, and numbers, it's great to have somebody like these guys around to feed us this stuff. So,
Mr. Marks, welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Bill Marks, Chief Fiscal Analyst for the House. And I believe you have a chart that 5 or 6 pages or 7 pages that is stapled together that that highlights the information we provided. And Mr. Chair, I will get to your question, but a little later on in here we have a column for what these offices do in other states.
Very good. Please proceed.
The information here, as the task force was meeting or preparing to meet and so on, there was some question about what was going on in other states. And Eric Nauman, my Senate counterpart, and I spent some time trying to get some of that information. Our basic criteria here, we were trying to find fiscal offices or joint budget offices sort of thing in other states that operated similar to what was being proposed here. We worked with the National Conference of State Legislatures to find the states, and then we contacted them. The 4 states that we settled on were Tennessee, Colorado, South Carolina, and Louisiana. And though the criteria, as I said, was a state with a joint budget office, we wanted to have a state that where it was a nonpartisan joint budget office, where it was a legislative branch office, and where those states also had legislative fiscal staff that were operating separate from this office. Our states weren't quite perfect in that we found out as we got into this that the South Carolina office is actually an executive branch entity, but it's a rather unique one. And if you look at the chart, the second column tells what kind of the governance structure. And I'm only going to go into several of these rows and highlight things. For the most part, I'll tell you what's in here. But the office governance one I did want to mention. In Tennessee, the Oversight Committee is the Joint Fiscal Review Committee, and it's composed of 6 senators and 9 representatives, and that committee is basically the oversight group for that office. In Colorado, it's the Legislative Council, and not all of this information is on your chart, but the Office of Legislative Council is a fairly big office, but the council itself is 18 legislators, 9 House and 9 Senate, that includes House and Senate leadership, and then that's the group that oversees the Legislative Council. The South Carolina one, as I mentioned, was rather unique. The Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Board in South Carolina is actually it's a hybrid. There are 3 appointments to the board, 1 by the Senate, 1 by the House, and 1 by the governor. And that's the entity that then does a number of other things, which we'll get to here later, but it includes fiscal notes. Louisiana, the oversight is by the Joint Committee on the Budget, which is on your page, but that is actually a 46-member committee that includes, obviously, a lot of legislators and does a lot of budget work in addition to overseeing that office. I need to add that we had, Mr. Nauman and I had good correspondence both by email and by telephone with Tennessee, Colorado, and South Carolina. We did not get a response back from Louisiana, and I don't want to, they could very likely be very busy. I don't know why they didn't respond. They didn't respond to emails or phone calls. So the information in here is a result of those kind of conversations and what the information we received by reading their statutes and reading information on their legislative websites. So those are the kind of offices. You can see some of the other information on the first page, session timing, location of the office. I do want to mention when a fiscal note is prepared, and particularly Note that for Tennessee and for Colorado, they are preparing fiscal notes on almost all bills. And they tell us that a lot of this, those fiscal notes are very short and say there is no fiscal impact, but they do something on every bill. The South Carolina situation, its fiscal notes are prepared when requested by the committee. They do something similar to a fiscal note, but it's called an advisory letter when an author or a member, any member, requests a fiscal note on a bill. And then the last two columns on here have Minnesota current law and Minnesota as proposed under the Legislative Budget Office, so just for comparison purposes, so you can, you know, the Minnesota current law, the law talks about when requested, a fiscal note is prepared when it's requested by the chair of the committee where the bill is, or the chair of House Ways and Means, or chair of Senate Finance. The bottom
Mark, if I could pause you for just a second. There's a couple of member questions that are timely to this, and I know that Representative Anderson had a question.
I did, Mr. Chair. And for Representative Vogel, did you have a conversation about the whole idea of fiscal notes on every bill? And if I could, I'm going to just say I would hope that this office doesn't do that just from the sheer volume that that would entail. And then just, I mean, there's a lot of bills that are introduced and are not heard. So did you guys have a conversation about that at all?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we have not had that conversation specifically in our committee. One of the things that I did when I was appointed chair was last fall to get together with all of the task force members individually in my office and just have a back and forth discussion and take notes on what's important here, and that obviously did come up. So it's something that I would hope as we get farther into this, and especially can, you know, I look at planning as you start up here and you start working our way down to the more of the tactical stuff. So that is definitely part of what I would like to see us discussing.
Okay, I have a question for Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I would just add on that there are a few fiscal notes prepared in Minnesota that we know are, there is no fiscal cost to the bill. And there's the rare occasion where a member says, I have to have a fiscal note on that bill that says it costs nothing. We, as fiscal staff requesting fiscal notes, we try to avoid doing that because it just clogs up the system and it requires a fiscal note to be prepared when we know it's going to come back and say zero. But it does happen.
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Marks, thank you for pointing that out. And I do think that that's an important distinction that we need to have. I do think that the members still need to have the flexibility that if they so wish to have a fiscal note, they can have it, you know, put together. I just don't want it to see, I mean, every single bill, and we've seen an uptick in bill introductions every single year. And so I think it would be, but I understand what you're saying, and I'm totally in agreement with that, too. So.
Mr. Marks or Representative Vogel or some of the other members that are here that are on the task force, I attended an NCSL conference in Colorado, and I met a legislator there from the state of Arizona. And I don't know if you looked at Arizona at all, but they had told me that they had a new fiscal note approach, and that the fiscal note came out and was integrated into the presentation of bills in real time, and I'm not sure how they did that, magic, I guess, maybe, but that it was actually embedded into the language of the bill, that they actually would have call-outs that would link into pieces of the bill in the new language that would identify that. Did you, in the course of your studies, look at the state of Arizona?
Mr. Chair and members, we did not, and I'd have to go back to my notes as to see why we didn't, but we did not look at Arizona. And I think I have heard about that system, Mr. Chair. There are ways that some states link the fiscal notes much more closer to the bill information than we've been able to do in Minnesota at this point.
We do have some other member questions. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this might be to Representative Vogel, a couple of queries. One is, what type of intelligent discussion and feedback will the legislative group have? I will give an example. We were looking at, during an interim previously, of doing a direct payment to people to rebate part of the costs of individualized health care, those type of policies. And we were told in the fiscal note process and all the encumbering activities that it would take 18 months and a huge cost. And within 3 minutes of talking with the Minute personnel that actually would be involved in, you know, that project, that it came down to you had to go through the IRS and have the MAGI certification process, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, our Department of Revenue has the information for adjusted gross income. In fact, they already have an existing process to be able to do that to see if you qualify for property tax rebates and other activities. And it doesn't take, you know, the period of time to just be rewriting a query. And they said, no, because it was a different term of adjustable. I think it was a modified adjustable gross income. That required you to go to the IRS and go through all this other stuff. To me, the stupidity is to get what we want and effectively do it, all we had to do is use the right, you know, delete the one word in front of the actual phrase, use the data that we had full authority to access, and grab the same code we're already using and write a new query and, you know, sort, etc., and implement it within weeks. And I'm not sure, I'm not going to talk about what the possible motivation to make it sound like it wasn't possible to do in a timely fashion. Would the LBO be able to be, you know, intelligent, interactive supporting group to be able to actually, when we're doing something, say, oh, did you mean this instead of this, because it moves it from, you know, $15, $20 million down to $250,000.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, that's, I mean, when the fiscal note request goes in, it's on the language that we put in this, or that's introduced in the bill, or if it's an amendment or something, it's on that language. We would always hope that if an agency sees that kind of situation, they would get back to the person who requests the fiscal note, which might be me or one of the other fiscal analysts, and say, are you sure this language is what's intended here? Because we know there's an easier way to do it. Agencies don't always do that. MMB, the Executive Budget Officers who are managing the process, might catch that or might not catch that. It depends on how familiar with, in this case, that terminology they would be or what it would mean. It's the sort of thing that we would hope would get dealt with in the fiscal note process. I don't know that a legislative budget office will necessarily be any better at it than the current system. Any system that encourages more dialogue, more discussion in there would help. I don't want to sound simplistic in this, but one other way would be to discuss the language with the agency before requesting the fiscal note, and commissioner or whoever you're talking with, what do you think of this? Will it work? How can I make it work better, kind of thing? Those kind of discussions need to occur to find out these things, that because we don't know them in a lot of cases, or we don't know the issues involved there. And as I say, I don't know that a legislative budget office will be better at it than the current process is. It may be as those people get to know the issues better. Those kind of technical terms, it can be hard to realize the distinctions, that there's a word missing or just the wrong words being used or something.
Representative Quam, follow up?
Just that, you know, a simple farm boy like me in 2 or 3 minutes was able to uncover it. Who's never been on a tax committee, I would hope that in the development, that part of the mission statement is, intelligent dialogue. You know, anyone that's done coding realizes garbage in, garbage out, but we have people involved in this process that should be familiar with the subject matter, and boy, it'd be helpful.
Well, and Representative Palm, I would remind you, I believe you've got a master's in chemistry, so simple farm boy. I don't know, but appreciated. Representative Vogt.
Mr. Chair and Representative, relative to that, not in direct answer to your question, but one of the things that came up through this whole, with my conversations with all of the different task force members as well as the ad hoc members to the task force, is this idea of credibility and the balancing act that this is. Because we want legislators to be able to have a relationship with the analyst that's putting together the fiscal note to help get better understanding, because the whole key here is to get the right fiscal note. The other side of that, of course, is that not every legislator is always probably happy with the fiscal note that comes out relative to their bill. And therefore, we have to be able to insulate this office from that, because you're putting these people in a very precarious position of then having to negotiate on what they think is should be the fiscal note relative to what the input that they're getting. So that's one of the things that, again, as we move through this process, I would like to see us discuss and hopefully be able to send some recommendations to the LBO, because it's one of those things that it's difficult. The other thing, too, is, and one of the reasons that I so much appreciate being able to have the opportunity to chair this task force is because I really believe this is a valuable thing for the legislature to have. When it's in a different office of government in the executive branch, the communication sometimes could be a little more strained. And as I just said, I want those communications to be constrained, because they can get out of hand and they could lead to bad results. But by the same token, I think whether it's the Office of Legislative Auditor that we have now or this LBO, it gives us a chance as legislators to interact with our own staff. And I think that will be productive in hopefully getting to the point of having better information, because the more communication you have, the better off you are.
Representative Kwame, you had a follow-up to that?
Yes, I do. And first of all, it was physics, not one of the sub-sciences of chemistry. But Representative Vogel brought up the communication issue, and more than once I've noticed little peculiarities in that someone will meet with a legislator or even a chair of a committee and then leave that meeting and go directly to a press conference, not have the information for the legislator or the chair, say, oh, we don't have that yet, and at the press conference that they attend right after leaving that meeting, quote, fiscal data. Is there some reassurance that at least the LBO will communicate with the legislature when they actually have data before communicating with the press and media?
Who'd like to take that one?
Mr. Chair, I would just respond. I don't think it's the role of the Legislative Budget Office to be communicating with the media at all in this case. And I don't think it's the fiscal note process that's at issue here. It's maybe other people within agencies and so on, but I don't think it's a fiscal note process issue.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. It might have been confusing. The directors, the MMV, the people in the executive branch that are involved in the process were the ones that talked to the media and released that, but didn't feel it was worthwhile to let the chair of a fiscal committee actually know that information before releasing to the media. And I'm just hoping that if we have the LBO, we'll have a little bit better communication, so at least at the same time, the legislative, chairs can know what's going on.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crom, I'm not sure the Legislative Budget Office is going to help that in any way, because they are going to be collecting information from the agencies and then putting it into a fiscal note. They're still going to be dependent on agencies to get some of that information. So I don't know that it's a fiscal note issue as much as agencies or the executive branch may choose to provide information to through a press release or something to that extent that they're that hasn't yet been entered into the fiscal note system either, perhaps.
Mr. Chair, I have my fingers crossed for the hope that we can have a better outcome.
Thank you, Representative Kwan. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Vogel and Mr. Marks. I appreciate your sorting all of this out with us, and I appreciate the spreadsheet. But I do have a couple of questions. At one of our national meetings, I talked with a legislator, and I wish I remembered which state it was, but they are limited to 5 bills per legislator per session, which would, you know, so you have to really be focused on what you want to do and do a good job with each of your 5 bills, which, but, you know, that is nowhere near what we're limited to. And trying to look at these things, I don't have any sense of how large these legislatures are, so how many people are you working with in the legislature? And skimming through this and seeing their staff ratios and the hours of work that they put in during session, and it looks like all or nearly all of them say they'd really like to have more staff. And then looking at the number of bills, the average number of bills or fiscal notes that each staff person prepares, they vary greatly. South Carolina has 49 fiscal notes per staff. Tennessee is 186, Colorado 100. Of course, we don't know Louisiana. Minnesota, under current law, is 160, but you're looking at 295. I mean, so we're talking high numbers per staff person compared to the other states that you've identified. And I'm just concerned about that. And then I have a second question, and then I'll let you respond if that's okay. And I apologize if I'm not understanding the timeline here. But as we have talked in this committee about rolling out programs, rolling out initiatives, and having them be properly prepared so that they can be successful from day one, I'm very glad we got the task force. And I know that you're all working really hard on making something here that will be successful. But if you don't report until December 1st, and we start January 1st of 19, and we'll probably start session, I'm going to look at the calendar, the 2nd or 3rd of January of 19, I'm just a little concerned about the workload and that really fast start that's going to have to happen.
Representative Vogel?
Well, thank you, Ms. Chair and Representative. That thought has crossed my mind. It is, you know, we're fortunate, first of all, that we do have a good staff to work with. But I do recognize the scope of this thing. And said it's going to be maybe difficult now during the legislative session to meeting much as a task force because there's so many other things going on. But the workload is certainly going to have to pick up after that to be able to accomplish what we need to accomplish. As far as the staffing, I can let Mr. Marks talk to that, but your words are not lost on me as far as the amount of work that's left to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so glad that we're doing this, because I really do believe in having our own information coming from our own body, but it's not going to necessarily be easy to roll it out. Once it's there and we can look back in 5 years and say, boy, this worked well, that's where you would really get your true measure of success on this thing, and I'm hopeful.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, and maybe I should take just a minute and talk about the chart has a number of rows across it that is summarizing the information from other states. Representative Ward was referencing basically what's at the bottom of page 1 and going up onto page 2 as far as the staff complement and then the calculation number of fiscal notes per number of fiscal notes prepared and then number of fiscal notes per staff, and is staffing level sufficient. The comment I want to make on Tennessee and Colorado, which are have higher numbers there, and need to remember also those are the states that do fiscal notes on every bill, and that a probably sizable portion of those fiscal notes are zero
fiscal notes. It's coming back and saying there is no fiscal impact. Mm-hmm. So some of those fiscal notes are a bit simpler. The South Carolina one at 49, we didn't have the information on Louisiana. And then the information on Minnesota, the 160 currently and the 295. And this is just a math function. The budget, the fiscal note for the budget, Legislative Budget Office was done with the assumption of 6.5 staff, and the funding is for that. And so we used that number here. The bill numbers for Minnesota are the number of fiscal notes that have been prepared over the past 3 years. And I also want to note that, for example, under current Minnesota law for 2015, it says 1,985 fiscal notes on 1,031 bills. The 1,031 bills, but there are first engrossment, second engrossment, third engrossment, or amendments. So that's how those numbers are functioning. So you could potentially have five fiscal notes on the same bill as the bill goes through the process. The math calculation there can be kind of illuminating. I think need to keep in mind that for Tennessee and Colorado, some of them are maybe not as complicated as others are going to be.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so what I'm hearing in that is that we don't necessarily have a balanced scale in what we're looking at in comparisons. We don't know if those are multiple fiscal notes on other engrossments. And so we're making some assumptions, I think, without exact comparisons. Is that correct?
Mr. Mark.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ward, yes. We didn't go and look at the content of fiscal notes in other states, so we know there are a number of fiscal notes that are very brief in Tennessee and Colorado, we don't know much about the substance of the ones that are substantial.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just then to go back to my original point, if we know what ours are and we're looking at 160 per staff person, and they're looking at Colorado or Tennessee with 186, but, you know, maybe zero notes included in that, and Colorado having only 100, it just seems to me like we're working really hard. We've got our staff working hard and doing a good job, but maybe we're not – maybe we could do a better job if we had more people. Again, I'm just concerned about rolling this out January 1st at the start of the session.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for this discussion. So I imagine that, you know, part of the fiscal note process and what we're thinking about is making our state government more proficient in management, right? And that's good. So, you know, how do you globally see the process you're going through with this work around fiscal notes to really drive at the idea of a proficient management system for our state government? Because I was thinking about it when I looked at this. I was like, oh, I wonder how these states rank on, you know, measures of management as a state and how well run they are. So, you know, I did a quick look, and Louisiana's like ranked number 50. And so, you know, I think about like how fiscal notes actually should drive a process of efficient management of our entire government, and this is just one piece of it. So does this work you're doing consider how this factors into the overall management of our state and to make sure that we're being mindful of you tweak one thing? And does it going to have effects? And, like, how are you thinking of it kind of a global way around how we do government well here? So that would be one question, kind of a bigger picture question. And then my other question was around the governance structure for this new for the new way of doing things is, you know, the Legislative Courting Commission. And if my understanding of it is every biennium that would change based on who's on it. My question is, maybe I'm incorrect in that, but around governance of it, would it be changing every 2 years based on election results and majority? And if so, how does that provide consistent leadership and oversight in a way that's not, you know, not constantly changing? So those would be my two questions to Representative Vogel or whoever could answer.
Representative Vogel?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. To the first question, I'm not sure, you know, the comparison to other states. What I'm looking at here is, and quite honestly, I make a comparison between this and the Office of the Legislative Auditor, where we as the legislature are responsible for the appropriation of the money. We now have a look back, independent, with the legislature, with the legislative auditor going back and looking at things. What this does, from my standpoint, is look forward. And it puts in the hands of the legislature the ability to do the fiscal analysis of the legislation we're going to be passing. So then we've done both parts. We've done the look ahead, as well as hopefully some analysis going on, and we've also got then the look back. And to me, it puts us in a better managerial state for what we're doing with the people's money. The LCC change is something that's been going for years, I would assume. And I would assume that there's political ramifications of that, just like anything else. But I would hope that there's enough mutual respect that changes from session to session, and that it can function as it has functioned in the past. So this really, because this thing is managed by the LCC, excuse me, I would see that functioning again, much like the OLA, who is also under the LCC. It's a governance structure that's been set up by the legislature, and I think both parties recognize that control can change from period to period, and obviously there's always going to be some political things probably, but it seems to have worked.
Representative Olson?
Thank you. Yeah, and I think I'm just, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just being mindful of that, like I think Representative Quam's point, you know, like we shouldn't have personal back and forth get in the way of our fiscal notes, and I hear a lot of that is, you know, probably in some ways behind some of the conversation we're even having here. And I don't think that's the way to effectively manage. And so I think all of us, regardless of where we are, we want to do away with that. And so just being mindful of the governance structures and how that plays into that so that we don't have political pieces driving our fiscal notes. And then the other part, though, about the proficient management I hear is like this change in it. I've heard some things around communication and, you know, just thinking about when we move ways we've done fiscal notes to a different way of doing them. It's not as simple as moving them, thinking about FTEs. It's thinking an entire way that there was a system built around that. And just being mindful when you change that system, it also has ramifications. And I hope that this group is thinking about that too, that it's part of a global system of how we do management as a state.
Representative Vogel.
And Mr. Chair and Representative, and that really, when we let off the discussion at our first meeting, the first thing I talked about was credibility. If we can't establish credibility with the LBO for both political parties, then it will fail because people aren't going to trust it, and it's not going to do its job. So that is really first and foremost here, is establishing credibility so that this thing functions well no matter which party is in charge, because it's serving both parties. And more importantly, it's serving the people of Minnesota with the information they need. But since we're the ones that have to appropriate the money, the concept is that it would be like your personal checkbook, having somebody else figure out how your money should be spent and then you just writing the check. This actually moves it out over back to us and says, look, we're going to be responsible for spending this money. Let us also determine how much money it's going to be.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a fascinating conversation with everybody. I just wanted to talk about a couple of items. I don't want members to look at the spreadsheet that Mr. Marks has put out and assume that if there's a bill limit, that means that the bills are small. I think what members do when you have a bill limit is instead you get these giant omnibus bills, like House File 1812. I will never forget that bill, ever.
So don't be misled that when you're looking at these, that actually means that there are fewer bills. It just means that the bills are dumped into one big pile, which makes the fiscal note even more complicated because you're looking at reams and reams of pages of what the financial implications are. And that makes it more challenging as lawmakers to figure out what's going on. And also, too, I do want to say that we, I think Minnesota is different than other states. And at least when I've had conversations with lawmakers across the nation, I think we're unique in a couple of different ways. We have nonpartisan fiscal staff. Bill Marks has been here, I think, probably since the day I was born. And I think Greg Hubinger as well, and I think Mr. Nobles, too. We have all very different departments, our House Research Department, that are all nonpartisan staff that do good work for the state of Minnesota, not for us, not for my caucus, not for your caucus, but for the state of Minnesota. And it's a tribute to them for being here for as long as they have because they are respectful of the state and the work that they do. And I see that this LBO is serving that same purpose, no matter who's in charge, that they are going to be here to make sure that the state of Minnesota has the most information available to them so that we can make good decisions. Because we are the state of Minnesota. We are the voices of the people. That being said, I have a couple of questions, Representative Vogel. One, I want to know what the timeline is for hiring the executive director, kind of get the ball rolling. And then also I want to know, and I don't know if this is maybe a question for you or if it would be better for Mr. Nobles too, I'm curious as to have we provided the LBO with the tools necessary so that there is a good line of communication with the agencies and cooperation with the agencies. I know that Mr. Nobles and the Office of the Legislative Auditor have particular tools in order to make sure that there's a good cohesive and cooperation between the agencies and the legislature. So do we have those tools in place or are those some things that we need to look at? So first, timeline for the ED. Second, are we getting cooperations from the agencies? And if Mr. Nobles wants to help out on any tools that we maybe need to have in place for that as well. And so Representative Vogel.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative. I have expressed the urgency to the LCC that the director needs to be hired. And I do think that there is work being done on a job description and some of the qualifications and so forth. I'm aware of that. So, yes, the urgency of that is definitely there. And I will, as a result of especially of this meeting, and that's one of the, I'm glad for the good discussion, express that again because I think that's of the utmost importance, especially as we're planning this thing. My hope is that we can have a director sitting there for a lot of these meetings hearing this discussion so that they're also aware of the concerns and what can be done. I'll defer to
Mr. Hubinger.
Well, for Mr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, we discussed earlier the process for hiring a director, and we have a position description draft completed. We're routing that around to the various offices for their review and comment. We're targeting a 9-week process once the position is posted. We're targeting July 1 for the hire.
Representative Anderson.
And so, Mr. Chair, so, Mr. Hubinger, when do you think that the posting will go out?
We would, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, we'd back to July 1 for a hire appointment, and then I would guess late March, early April for the posting.
Okay. And Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel or Mr. Nobles, can you talk to me about the tools that we have in place or lack of tools that maybe we need to consider so that we get the cooperation that we need to actually facilitate the fiscal notes? And I don't know, Representative Vogel, if you want to speak to that first or how you can handle it.
Representative Vogel?
Mr. Chair and Representative, actually, I'll let Mr. Nobles speak to it first. He probably is.
Mr. Nobles, welcome to the committee. If you would, please. Identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and Representative Anderson, thank you for the question. I think it's very important in two respects. Number one, there is the law that this office will need to give it proper authority and the requirements for other organizations to cooperate. And you have given that authority in law to the legislative auditor's office, and it is very important. I carry our statute around with me all the time, because whenever there is a question about our authority or jurisdiction, it's a matter of what does the law say. So I think that is a very important thing, especially that this office have authority to see all the data that it needs to see in a timely way. We have that authority. We also have subpoena authority. I don't know that this office is going to need that, but there have been occasions when we have. So I think just the charter, the legal charter that you give and the authority really needs a close examination. There's also been issues raised about data practices. And again, that's another very important part of our office's day-to-day operations. We have access to all data in state government or elsewhere, frankly, wherever public funds are involved, regardless of classification. The other side of that is that we are subject, unlike any other office in the legislative branch, to the Government Data Practices Act. We have to keep data that we receive that is classified as not public as not public. And so I think there will be some issues that will come up as this office goes over to DHS, for example, and wants access to maybe health records or MA records, as we often get access. What is its obligation under the law to maintain the privacy of those data? So I think the legal charter is very important. I am on the task force, and I'd be happy to work with continue to work with the task force on some of those issues. I would also add that you need to give this office a little bit of time to evolve. It will not be exactly perfect on day one. The Office of the Legislative Auditor that you have today was not the Legislative Auditor's Office that existed in 1973 when it was created. We have had to evolve over time, both in terms of our legal authority, and I've come to the legislature on several occasions and said, we've run into a situation where we need you to amend our law so that we will have clearer authority. And then there's another piece of operating in this environment, and that's what I guess I would call the protocols, relationships that have to be built. And you referred to that, Madam Chair. Yes, we have authority, and we have even subpoena power, but we don't, you know, rely on a heavy hammer when we're dealing with people, unless we have to. So we build relationships so that people in the executive branch know that we are dealing with them in a fair, nonpartisan way. And you just build those over time. One of the things that I would mention, too, that changed over time, and it was kind of relevant, I think, to a question that was raised by Representative Olson, and that is the Legislative Audit Commission actually appoints the legislative auditor. And I do serve a six-year term. I'm currently in my sixth term. And the Legislative Audit Commission is a bipartisan commission by law. That was, again, not the way it was when it was first established. But there were some issues that came up over time so that to kind of reinforce the nonpartisan nature, not only the Office of Legislative Auditor, but the Legislative Audit Commission, the legislature changed that so that no matter who is in the majority minority, the composition of the Legislative Audit Commission that appoints me is bipartisan. I would say that the Legislative Coordinating Commission will be bipartisan if the House and the Senate are controlled by different parties, and I won't even get into that. But so it is a little bit different than the Legislative Audit Commission. And over time, again, I would emphasize, the Legislative Audit Commission didn't start out that way. But some issues came up where the members of the commission themselves said, we want to get rid of this question, which frankly came from Governor Carlson about the nature of the political makeup of the Legislative Audit Commission, and the commission came together and said, we don't want that to be an issue, we will make it bipartisan. Again, my point is, we've been in operation since 1973, and we have had an opportunity to develop our law, our protocols, our relationships, and this office will need some time to do that as well.
Anderson,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could, if Mr. Gehring can talk to us. Remind me again, do we have the same control measures in place or cooperation that we've allowed to the OLA, or how do we have that?
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, so the statute that creates the budget office does include provisions that require the director and the office to adopt standards related to cooperation by agencies and how data will be handled and secured. It's not as specific as Auditor Noble's statute, as he said. It's his statute has evolved quite a bit over time, and it's much more detailed than what you've adopted for the LBO. But many of the same concepts could be moved into the LBO office statutes if you chose to do so.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Vogel, I think that would be the jumping-off point, is looking at the authority that the legislature over the years has granted to the OLA to make sure that we're going to make the LBO successful and that they can have those relationships, as Mr. Nobles mentioned, that they can develop those and then also have the authority to get the data that we're looking for to be successful in providing information to the state of Minnesota. I also want to just pick up on one thing, and then I'll stop here. Mr. Nobles, I appreciate your comments on the time to evolve. I've been looking at this issue quite a bit, and I think that my concern is that there is going to be some, you're going to need some ramp-up time, if you will, on this. And I think it would be helpful for the LBO office to not immediately be expected to provide fiscal notes, but instead they would be almost auditing the fiscal notes to say, yep, we think these are good. Nope, we don't think these are good. And at least have maybe 1 or 2 years of just doing that until they can actually perform the fiscal notes themselves. Again, it gives them that time and opportunity to develop those relationships with agency staff that have the expertise in these areas, and then also just understanding what the legislature is looking for out of fiscal notes, too. So that would be my 2 cents on that as well. But that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a couple of questions myself for either Representative Vogel or Mr. Nobles, and then Mr. Marks, eventually one for you as well. So we've talked a lot about roadmaps and underlying architectures and things like that for other issues. You've got a good roadmap on what success looks like and how you're going to incrementally get there, so that I think we all have the concern to make sure that this is, when launched correctly. Have you got those process controls and such in place for your eventual go live to Chair Anderson's question? Representative Vogel?
Mr. Chair, at this point I would not say that we have a roadmap. What we've done is started discussions on, first of all, with the legislation itself. It's a little bit hard to figure out exactly what the task force has responsibility for when it says to put together a plan with a, there's a couple of conditions with that plan that are supposed to be included. So I wouldn't say that there's a roadmap, and that's one of the reasons that I would like, and I agree totally with getting the director on as soon as we can, because we're here to come up with ideas and plans, and that's why this is good today again, getting feedback. And putting that into the form of recommendations, because the director is the one that's going to have to run the department. The director is the one that's going to have to run staff and actually make this thing successful. So I'm afraid I can't say that we do have a roadmap at this point.
Mr. Nobles, care to comment on that at all? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, a roadmap will have many different dimensions. I mean, one is the framework, the legal framework. And that's something that certainly the legislature has to do, and I think we can continue to work on that even during this legislative session if we are going to even go live, but in the way Representative Anderson suggests. I mean, we probably ought to take this opportunity during this legislative session to maybe add some provisions or tweak some provisions in the law that was passed. But I would also say that there will be a responsibility, even a burden, on whoever you appoint as director to establish the internal roadmap of how you get from A to Z on these assignments. And, again, I would tell you at the Office of Legislative Auditor, we evolved that also over time, so that now we almost have a kind of a rhythm to our process. You give us assignments, we do work plans. We have schedules. They involve certain known activities. We have a final product we have internal controls, we have external reviews. All of that has had to evolve and be specified over time. And each of those elements has details within them that we have had to develop so that we can accomplish our mission and our goal. And again, this office, like OLA, is going to have to be really mission and goal driven. And I would, with all due respect, I mean, the new director can establish whatever he or she wants to state as, but I think Representative Vogel has put it very well in the past. And it just so happens to be the same goal we have on our wall, and that is every one of our reports will be accurate, objective, timely, and useful. Four easy, simple words, right? But a lot of work to get there. And it'll be a lot of work for these people, too. And they will have to establish the procedures, the process, the roadmap that will get them there through the hiring, through the training, through the quality control that they establish internally.
Well, Mr. Nobles, thank you for that. Because I share Representative Ward's concern that I want to make sure that when this goes live, that it's something that we can all say, that is really good. And I think we all understand that there will be small hurdles, but unlike some other things, I'd like them to be just small hurdles. And then, Mr. Marks, if you would, you said something that piqued my interest. You used the word confidential fiscal note, which, you know, to play on Representative Qualms, I'm just a simple GIS guy, and I'm kind of confused by that. What is a confidential fiscal note, and how many do you do?
Mr. Chair and members, a confidential fiscal note is just that. And this is a result of actually the 2012 Legislative Auditor's Report, which recommended that there be a method so that a member could get information on an idea, on a bill draft. It needs to be in the form of a bill draft, but get that information without necessarily sharing it with everybody. So you've got an idea that you don't want to share with everybody. We can get a fiscal note on that. It needs to be put in a bill draft format. It doesn't have a bill number. The system, the current fiscal note system, assigns it a bill number for purposes of tracking it, but it's a 9,000 bill to let on one of the secrets, so it's going to have a bill name like 9001 or something like that. But that request goes in, and under law, it is confidential. It goes to Minnesota Management and Budget. They assign it to the appropriate agency or agencies. It is confidential for those people as well. They cannot share that information with others. And then the fiscal note comes back to the requester, which could be me or one of the other fiscal staff, or currently Mr. Kennedy is the staff person for Ways and Means, who are the ones who have access to requesting fiscal notes. And then we would provide it to the person who asked us to get it. That's the extent of its availability unless the bill gets introduced. And once it gets introduced, then the law suggests that it becomes public information. So that's that process. And this was, I believe it was, Mr. Noble, 2012 was the date of your report. So it was the result of a recommendation in the 2012 report on fiscal notes from the legislative auditor.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I think we have some other member questions. Representative Kunesh-Padin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. So I'm just a humble library media specialist and freshman legislator. Such a humble group we have here. I'm just kind of trying to walk through the timeline of the inception of this task force and the development of this office. And if I'm reading my notes correctly, it was created by the Legislative Budget Office, and the responsibility of the Budget Office is to replace the Minnesota Management and Budget. And so my question is, why was that necessary, and what will this, I mean, what is the reason behind all of this?
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative. Well, the main intent is to have the legislature having an independent office do fiscal notes. It wasn't a reflection necessarily that I guess MMB is doing anything wrong. I think there was a realization, though, that as we looked at functions such as EOLA, that we need, as I had explained, this the analogy I've used is we have the checkbook, but we've been letting somebody else tell us how much the electricity bill is going to be. What this does is it moves it back to us and says, okay, this is what we're projecting for the electricity bill, and this is what we're going to appropriate for the payment of that bill. So what we're doing is moving back the fiscal analysis, the financial analysis of those things that we're appropriating back to the legislature where actually those appropriations are done.
Representative Kunesh-Badin?
I'm just trying to picture that in my mind. I'm a very visual person. So would we basically be shifting 6.5 people from one department to another department? And aren't those people doing the exact same thing, just in a different maybe location?
Representative Ogle.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Well, I'm not sure. MMB has, in the fiscal note, fiscal note that we used for the fiscal note bill, has indicated that they didn't think that they were going to need any less staffing. Now, what those people will be doing if they're not doing fiscal notes, I'm not sure. The responsibility of the legislature will have the director hire staff that can review the fiscal notes. So my sense would be that there probably could be some savings at MMB if they don't indeed have to do this, although the people at MMB are also doing other functions. So they ramp up during the legislative session and use those people for fiscal notes, and then through the remainder of the year, they're also working on other things, as would be the case possibly with this, but then working on it from the legislators' perspective rather than the executive branch perspective.
Follow-up?
Yes. And then how does MMB feel about the removal or the exchange of this position?
Representative Vogel?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I wouldn't say that they're overly enamored. You know, they've been doing it, and I think they're proud of the work they do, and I give that to them. But there's times when I think the legislature has to make a decision on what's the best way for the legislature to handle the people's money, and that's what this is a matter of, from my perspective. So, again, I go back to the OLA. And what they do for us as far as doing objective reports that help us better spend the people's money or look at how it's being spent. So I guess it's just one of those things that will each party will have to deal with it on their own.
Just one more. Representative Badin.
Okay, you just keep picking my interest. So can you give me an example of either how this is going to be more efficient and better for us than the way that it's been in the past, or if there were examples in the past where, you know, this became unnecessary or this was thought to be an important change in the way we do these fiscal notes?
Representative Vogel, if I could, I'll let you answer that. And I know Mr. Nobles did a report on this, so we'll invite him back to maybe add some extra clarity to this. Representative Vogel, and then as Mr. Nobles comes down.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative, being chair of this committee, I've tried to stay out of the debate on what might have been done in the past or where the credibility might have failed us sometimes. I know I questioned a note in this committee, I believe it was with Minute last year, where they were projecting expenditure increases but weren't taking expenditure decreases from the parties that would be basically transferring duties from their agency to Minute. So, you know, I think we're always going to have discussions and as to whether or not putting it here will solve it, I'm not so sure, but at least there can never be a hint of bias that there's an state agency, which is under the executive branch, influencing the outcome of a fiscal note.
Mr. Nobles?
Mr. Chair and members, I will speak more from my own experience working at the legislature, and that did begin, Madam Chair, before you were born.
What a flatterer.
Before many of you were born, probably. Yes, I've been here for, I think it's 45 years. But anyway, when I came to work here, I think most of the staff who worked for the legislature could pretty much get in one car and go to lunch all together. And there was a legislator here at that time. He actually became Speaker, Martin Szabo, who was also a great advocate of strengthening the legislative branch. He was also one of the founders of the Conference of State Legislatures. He just strongly believed that the legislative branch needed to play a stronger role in our governmental federalist system. And so what Representative Speaker Szabo did over time, and much of this started to happen when I came to work here, so I had the privilege of seeing this develop. They brought the revisor's office into the legislative branch from the judicial branch, not because they were doing a bad job, but because the legislators said, well, we want people we can interact with on a face-to-face basis in this building to draft our legislation. So, again, it was just, this is a legislative function. We want staff to help us perform this function. Attorneys, when I first came, the legislature was pretty much dependent on either lobbyists or the Attorney General's office for legal advice. And now you have lawyers here sitting with you, providing you with that legal advice. The legislature established its own legislative reference library to help you with research. Researchers, both partisan and nonpartisan, built into the legislative branch so you could turn to people down the hall rather than to lobbyists or executive branch agencies. And then the Office of the Legislative Auditor. The public examiner, prior to the creation of the Office of Legislative Auditor, was the auditor of all government, state and local. And the public examiner was doing a fabulous job. In fact, our conference room is named for the former public examiner, Bob Whitaker, because he became the first legislative auditor. The legislature just transferred that function into the legislative branch. That's how the Office of the Legislative Auditor was created, by bringing a function from the executive branch into the legislative branch, so that you would have sitting in front of you somebody that works for you, that is appointed by your colleagues, rather than somebody that was appointed by the governor. So, you know, I think that is a lot of, and I think that was touched on by some of the other members, as to what this is all about. It's kind of another step in a pattern that started back in 1972, to build the strength of the capacity and resource of the legislative branch.
That's a great answer. Thank you.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments, actually. Sorry I was a little late, but I think this is a very, very exciting thing that we're doing here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, to me, I look at private business and things, and, you know, businesses have to evolve, like Mr. Nobles has said, and they have to change. And they do that through reorganization. And that's what we're doing here. We're doing a little bit of a reorganization, and what it's doing, I hope it will do, and you know, the commission always has to look at their goals, and how they're going to get there on this organization, but to streamline, which we'll be doing, I think, shorten the lines of communication, like Mr. Nobles was talking about, you know, when you all used to be able to hop in a car and go to lunch, communications were pretty short there, and, you know, to develop better efficiencies, which I think every organization has to do. From time to time, you have to be introspective, and you have to look at how you can improve, and that's what we're doing, and hopefully we're going to see some cost savings from this, too, I would think, if you develop efficiencies. So, you know, if you don't take these steps from time to time, whether it be in government or private business, you're going to fail. Things are really going to get screwed up. And so there's a certain risk here in the idea of this has to evolve. It's not going to be perfect from the start. Is very, very true. But what you're looking for is the end result, and hopefully, like you say, a roadmap, clear goals, and a clear mission statement, and I hope you're working on that, on what we want to accomplish here. I think it'll be good for the legislature. So not a question, just a comment, but I'm very happy to see those two gentlemen sitting in front of us here are working on this because they have the utmost confidence it's going to work out just swell. Thank you.
Before we get on to Representative Olson's question, and I'll get to you in a second, I just wanted to point out that there have been some examples of fiscal note being fairly out of whack in just this committee in the last year and a couple of months. There were some questions raised around the minutes revising bill that I had last year that we were trying to change some of the fundamentals of that. I believe the gain-sharing bill came back with some wildly different fiscal notes. And I think we would all agree that we want the most accurate fiscal note that we can possibly have so that we can make a decision. And, you know, there were several times that in the short time that I've been here, I've sent them back asking for clarification, and they come back either as zero when they started off at millions of dollars. And I think that that's part of the goal of this office and this effort is to make sure that the decisions that we have to make here are as informed as we possibly can. So, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This conversation is good, and I think it's really getting into the heart of some stuff. So I just want to double back on the part that we heard from the OLA and the evolution of making sure this truly is not governed in a partisan way. I really hope that just we take that to heart. We're saying, oh, we've done a kind of a lot of, like, I hope so's. You know, and I don't think that's good enough because I think, again, what got us here is some partisan disagreements on if MMB was doing a good job. And I don't want partisan disagreements to, and I think we could fight that all day if the gain sharing, you know, fiscal note was incorrect or correct. You know, I think that's kind of the spirit of how we got here. So I really don't, if we're going to go forward with this, I really want to make sure it's not done in a partisan way, so I do have some concerns that I didn't feel fully satisfied by the answers today, especially hearing what Mr. Nobles brought up and the evolution of what they learned through OLA. So I do want to say that I hope we have further conversation on that. And I guess I'm a little confused that OLA was helpful in this, but what role, to Representative Uglum's point about what role the OLA actually has in helping roll this out. So I don't know if that is a clarification. When you had, did you mean that when you?
Representative Uglum.
Thank you. I didn't exactly mean the fact that the OLA is going to have an active point in this, but of course the OLA has always given us some pretty good advice, I think, and that's what a new organization needs is advice. So I'm hopeful that that type of thing will be happening.
And Representative Olson, if I could, Speaker Dowd and then Leader Bach carried this bill back in, I think it was 2015. So I think that says an awful lot to both sides, that the leaders of the respective caucuses and the respective chambers felt passionately enough that this should be done. I think that sends a fairly strong message. So, you know, none of us want this to be a partisan office. Mm-hmm. I think we all would love to have the completely nonpartisan approach of Auditor Nobles rolled out as we look at this moving forward. Mm-hmm. Because that is one of the things I appreciate the most about Auditor Nobles is every report that I've ever read, and I've read a lot of them, love your stuff, I've read them and they all are exactly down the middle. Balls and strikes are called consistently throughout them. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing that the spirit of this, I'm just saying the governance-ness of this, given what we just heard from the OLA, that they had to evolve for a little better governance that wasn't as partisan. And to that point, I think that we've heard a few times about the evolution of needing, we won't get this right out of the gate, that we'll need some processes, we'll need to change, and I hope we carry that across all of the conversations we're having in this room and will continue to have, that things do take evolution and they take tweaking and they take working closely with our government agencies to help make them work.
And to that point, I believe Representative Kwame had a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, one of the things that really helps, and Mr. Nobles said it very well, but over the years, the majority, the control, the leadership between this chamber, that the other chamber, they change and they're fluid. And I think that helps the nonpartisan staff realize that, you know, it's easier to be calling it right, because next year or a couple of years down the line, the person that was the ranking member on a committee will be the chair. You know, this happens. And I think, you know, the two-year cycle we're on, I think helps keep that nonpartisan staff, you know, nonpartisan. And I have high confidence. And if we had stopped with the testimony of Mr. Nobles, I think that would have been an eloquent way of stating it.
Mr. Marks, did you want to weigh in on that?
Not that question,
okay.
Mr. Chair. I wanted to get back to one thing on the chart yet to answer some other questions when you're ready.
I believe we're ready. To you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the only other line that I wanted to mention on the chart was on the top of page 5. Representative Anderson, I think, asked, and a couple others hinted at what are other roles, possible roles of these offices. And we asked that question, and the chart there lists what else these offices do in Tennessee, Colorado, and South Carolina. So just for your information to get at that. And I would add that when we made our decisions on which staff or which states to look at, there are a multitude of structures on fiscal staff, legislative fiscal staff, legislative budget office staff, and who does fiscal notes, executive branch versus legislative branch in the states. So there are any number of varieties here, and what groups of people or what kinds of groups of functions there might be in the office besides fiscal notes. So there are a variety of things.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. I believe, Chair Anderson, you had...
Mr. Chair, just final wrap-up if everybody has asked questions.
I had nobody else on the list.
Okay.
Unless there are other member questions. Once, twice.
So for tomorrow, folks, we have the regular committee time at 1 o'clock until our 2:45 time. And then after session, we will have another session for state government finance. And it just depends upon, you know, how things play out tomorrow. So just make sure that you don't go home for the day and that we will be back here at that time. And Mr. Holquist, where will we be meeting in the evening hours? In this room? So in this room, okay.
And Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Holquist has sent that out to members, but maybe a reminder. And Representative Olson?
Yes, to the Chair. Is the plan to move the Minlars bill out tomorrow or to lay it over?
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson. I think it depends upon the data that we're able to receive from the agencies on this issue.
Okay, members, with that...